Okay, good evening. Welcome back to the weekly Halachos of Raising Children Shir. We've been speaking about the Halachos of Chinuch, and in particular, really the last 2 weeks, we've been talking about the concept of being mechanech. Less, I should say 3 weeks, we've been talking about the concept of being mechanech, of training children not to do things, on the negative commandments, on los essays. We spent that first, the second shir overall, the first of this set of shirim, we spoke about the question of whether there even is such a mitzvah of chinuch on mitzvah los essay at all, or maybe the mitzvah of chinuch only applies to positive commandments. But once we understood that the majority of the poskim do assume that there's a mitzvah chinuch on negative commandments, so the question that we started to deal with was less chinuch and more, if you remember, lahafresh me iser, meaning a katan who is, we talked about the Gemara in Yevamos at least two times already, the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that a katan who is ochel nevelos utrefos, he's trying to eat a McDonald's, so the Gemara seems to assume that Beis Din is not mitzvah lahafrisho, no one's chayiv, it says, to separate him, to prevent him, to keep him away from eating the treif that he's about to eat. At least strictly speaking on a halachic level. On a level of the impact on his neshama, we assume that treif food negatively impacts a person's neshama, which is why even the Ramah quotes, this is a crazy thing, the Ramah quotes at least a chumrah, that even a baby who's nursing when he's literally a week old, whatever it is, they shouldn't nurse from a non-Jewish woman. Have you heard of this before? They shouldn't ideally nurse from a non-Jewish woman. Why? So one of the reasons is because the non-Jewish woman, she eats nevelos and trefos. She eats McDonald's every day. And so the milk that she produces, that she's going to give off to this child, is contaminated with the isurim that she ate over the course of her lifetime. It's a very fascinating thing that the Ramah quotes as a chumra lalacha. You think it doesn't come up, but it actually comes up. Someone just asked me, it was maybe 2 months ago, someone sent me a shayla that they were in the hospital, their wife had just had babies, and I think it was twins in that case, and the babies were in need of food, obviously, because they were born, but since it was two of them and it was early on, the mother hadn't yet developed enough milk to give off, so one of the options was there's, I guess, donor milk in the ward or whatever over there to give to people who need that sort of situation. So the donor milk came from a non-Jewish woman, so should they use the non-Jewish milk? It was literally a question they were asking. This is not about Chol HaLakum, this is a different shayla, right? It's coming from a non-Jewish woman. So in that case, I told him, look, a formula is equally good and then fine. But if the doctors think this is more helpful for some reason, I don't know if there's really a reason for that. Formula might be just as good. Yeah, but if the child needs it for any reason, so then it's a chumrah. It's a chumrah, and you do away with the chumrah. What's so fascinating, it's famous, is Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out in his commentary on Chumash that if you look, the source, he points to a Vilna Gaon about this, the source that we know of a Jew who wouldn't nurse from a non-Jewish woman, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? So we learn, Chazal tell us, that peh she'asid l'daber HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the mouth that was going to talk with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, peh el peh, adaber bo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks with Moshe Rabbeinu, mouth to mouth, they have a face-to-face relationship, correct? That mouth is going to talk to Hashem, like we say in English, you kiss your mother with that mouth, right? So you're going to talk to God with that mouth? You're going to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have nevuah, the highest level, with a mouth that drank from a non-Jewish woman? So Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't drink from a non-Jewish woman, so what's the obvious question then? What does that apply to us? What does that apply to us? That applies to Moshe Rabbeinu, not us. Answer, every Jewish child is supposed to have the potential, maybe not to be a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, literally, because Moshe Rabbeinu's Nebuah is unique and singular, and that's one of the staples of Emunah, one of the Sodei HaEmunah, the principles of faith that you have to believe. But to be a Tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, to be a Navi on some level, every Jewish child has the ability to do so. So every Jewish child has this safeguard of avoiding drinking from the non-Jewish woman. A beautiful idea from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So we spoke again about the concept of safinam biadayim, that based on the fact that you have to separate, as a father at least, even if Beis Din doesn't have to, you have to separate your child from Yisurim. Additionally, there's also the issue of lo safinam biadayim. If you remember, the pasuk says lo sochlum, and we learned from the Gemara Nivamos that lo sochlum is also darshined, an additional level of interpretation, as lo sa'achilum, which means that you can't feed the Isurim to the Jewish baby or the Jewish child of any age whatsoever. It doesn't really matter what age they are. You can't put treif into their mouth. You can't be matame, the Kohen, who's a baby, actively. You can't feed them shrutzim or dam. Remember, the Gemara had three examples, and we said it applies in Kol Tergul, and we spoke about the details of that. And last week, I think we focused mainly on basar b'chalav, not even. We focused on eating milk after meat. Within 6 hours, a child having that. So we're going to continue in that vein today, but in a little bit of a different realm of halacha, back in Orachayim, and this, I think, will help us conclude the segment on Safinan, on feeding children Isurim, and it'll also get us a little bit of a head start launching towards what we'll talk about in the future weeks, maybe we'll move into the sugya of Shabbos, children keeping Shabbos. So first, before we even begin the questions that we're going to start with and we're going to spend the rest of the night on, if you look in source number one, you have a source from Yalka Yosef, Yalka Yosef by Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the son of Rav Avadya Yosef. It's the Dinei Chinuch that I've quoted from the past. So here, he says in straight, easy sentences what's spelled out over the course of a few halachos in Shulchan Aruch. The question we're going to begin with to deal with, if you look at the title over here, is Yom HaKippurim. On Yom Kippur, what kind of chinuch applies to a child? What do you have to train a child in for Yom Kippur? What does he have to keep? What does he not have to keep? What can't he keep, right? What are the dinei chinuch when it comes to Yom Kippur? It's interesting to note, Rav Harfinis notes this in a sefer that we've quoted a few times already, Chinuch Yisrael. He points out that the chiyuv of chinuch begins before Yom Kippur. For Yom Kippur, it begins before Yom Kippur. Why? What happens before Yom Kippur? Erev Yom Kippur, exactly. The psukim tell us, B'tesh'a b'chodesh ba'erev, me'erev ad erev, tish b'su shabbat techem. The Gemara says, this is such a strange thing. The Gemara says the Pasuk seems to be implying that from the 9th of the month through the 10th of the month, you keep Yom Kippur. That's not true. You keep Yom Kippur on the 10th, not on the 9th. So what happens on the 9th? So the Gemara says, Kol ha'ochel b'tshi'i. Anyone who eats on the 9th day of the month is ke'ilu his'ana b'tshi'i uva'asiri. It's as if he fasted both on the 9th and on the 10th, meaning there's a mitzvah. There's a real mitzvah. There's a halacha. They have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. You have to eat meals. Some of the Achronim HaChumras to have a sucking candy in their mouth all day on the Erev Yom Kippur to make sure they were always eating on Erev Yom Kippur. But there's definitely a mitzvah to make a suda, definitely a mitzvah to eat before. So Rav Harfinis says, that's a mitzvah. Maybe it's a mitzvah daraisa. So if it's a real mitzvah, however you classify it, however you count it in the Taryag mitzvos, if it's a real mitzvah, you should have to train your child in it when he reaches the age of chinuch, no? So if the child is at the age where he understands what eating is, and he understands what Yom Kippur is, and he understands what the fasting and what the preparing for a fast is, you gotta train him in eating on Erev Yom Kippur before the fast begins, on the day before. You could really discuss this, because what's the reason we eat before Yom Kippur? Anyone know? Why do we eat? What's the reason for that mitzvah, if there is a reason? You can take a guess otherwise. I would have said to prepare. To prepare, meaning the more you fill up, the more effective your fasting will be. Is that a good way to say it? The more effective your fasting will be. Okay, any other reasons? So the Rabbeinu Yonah in his Shari Tshuva gives us two or three reasons. One of them is preparation. The other possibility is that, well, halavai, Yom Kippur is really a yantif. So ideally, what would we do on a yantif? We'd have a suda, we'd have a meal. We can't eat on Yom Kippur, obviously. So when do we have our meal? When do we have our suda's yantif? On Erev Yom Kippur. And it's a beautiful concept to think about. As you sit there eating, this is a yantif suda. By force, we're not able to have this on the day of yantif. But ideally, what this represents is we're celebrating Yom Kippur. We're enjoying Yom Kippur in the sense of kapara. We're getting ready, but not only getting ready for the fast, but getting ready for the Kedushas Hayom and the Simcha of the Yom of Yom Kippur by eating the Sudas Yantiv on Erev Yom Kippur. The other possibility, which is a fascinating discussion in the Rambam, we don't have time to speak about it now, but I spoke about it before Yom Kippur this year, actually, at Yula Boys. The idea that maybe, according to the Rambam, the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is actually not to help with the fast, but actually helps create the fast, meaning, if a person just doesn't eat on Yom Kippur, maybe he wasn't hungry. Maybe he was not in the mood to eat all day. I don't know, it doesn't really happen to me ever, but it could happen to some people. Maybe he was doing intermittent fasting. Maybe it was a health thing. He chose 24 hours to just go off of his regular diet. But if a person just doesn't eat, he can't prove that he was fasting for Yom Kippur. However, says the Rambam, if every other day he eats and then suddenly there's a hard stop, now it's clear, it's a shvisa hanikeres. It's clear, it's recognizable, it's discernible that the reason why he stopped eating is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the day of Yom Kippur. So you have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur to ensure that there's a contrast, to ensure that the day before was eating and the day afterwards was not eating. It shows you that you were really fasting for Hashem, not only because out of convenience or out of lack of hunger or anything like that. Either way, whatever the reason is, my point is that if the reason is preparing for the fast, does that apply to a katan? No, he's not fasting. And if the reason is Simchas Yontif, okay, I hear it's a positive mitzvah. It's celebrating the Yontif. You have to train him in that. But again, if the mitzvah is to create the Shvisa HaNikeres, the recognizable fasting of the next day, is that applicable to a katan? So really, there's room to argue over here with Rav Harfinis. Is it really true in logic, in Svara, that you should have the mitzvah of fasting to have chinuch on it on the day before Yom Kippur? Or is that not so clear according to all the poskim? We'll leave that for now. Of course, when it comes to Yom Kippur, what we're all thinking of is there are chamisha inuyim. There are five things that we're supposed to do, either refrain from, in order to torture ourselves, quite literally, in order to torture ourselves on the day of Yom Kippur. That's achila and shsiya, eating and drinking, rechitza, washing ourselves, sicha, applying like ointment, right, shmirin, exactly, tashmish amita, which is not applicable to a katan, obviously, and ilas sandal, wearing shoes, which we assume to be like comfortable shoes, leather shoes. So all those things are not permissible on Yom Kippur, obvious, correct? Easy, good. Which of those, or any of those, do you have to assume that there's a mitzvah chinuch on those? Like, in which cases do you have to train your child on those mitzvahs? So let's lay out some of the details. We'll get a little bit of a scoop here, and we're not going to go deep into it. We're going to come back to some of the Gemaras, but it's going to set us up for a question that we'll deal with the rest of the night. So first of all, a parent is not chayev, and this is what you have in source number one. A parent is not chayev to train a child below the age of 9 to fast. The training, the chinuch for fasting on Yom Kippur begins at the age of 9, as long as the child is capable, is strong enough at the age of 9. But if the child is a little bit weaker at the age of 10, we assume they're able to fast. That's all in Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim Tafresh Tes Zayin that the Yalkut Yosef here in source number 1 is quoting for us. At that age, 9 or 10, we don't just say, don't eat for 25 hours. We say, take a few hours here, take a few hours there, meaning delay breakfast a little bit, have a late breakfast, don't eat at night. We find l'sha'os, we find hours during the day that the child, instead of just indulging in all his regular delicacies, he paces himself a little bit more. He holds back a little bit for an hour here, an hour there, and every year, hopefully, as the child grows, the number of hours increases until he's able to fast a full day. It's a training in the very literal sense. Of course, it goes without saying, but we'll say it, if the child is in danger in any way, or even just extremely hungry or extremely thirsty, the answer is not that he's allowed to eat. The answer is he must eat, he must drink, right? He has to save himself, he has to take care of himself. But assuming that he's healthy and strong and able to make it, then we give him a few hours here and there to train himself in not eating on Yom Kippur. I still have memories of those years. I don't know if you guys do. I still have memories of those years, like the first time that I was trying to hold off, and I was in shul. So the shul, like, there's, you know, all the adults are downstairs, but upstairs there's groups for the kids, whatever. So I just remember, like, the younger kids were eating those long pretzel rods they always had in the Youngest of Woodmere, and the gross cherry soda they were drinking, whatever regular snack for groups there. And I was, like, standing right outside, like, has it been an hour? I was supposed to wait an hour. It's been 30 minutes, but, like, I'm really young. Maybe I can't make it. I was, like, so hungry watching. I remember eating and then feeling bad, and then eating and feeling bad. The whole day was eating and feeling bad. So I really did tshuva. I really did, you know. As I was doing the aver, I was doing tshuva, you know. But I remember those traumatic memories. But that's the idea, is to train the kid. Okay, so he pushes himself a little more. He has good stamina. He'll last longer. He has bad stamina. He won't last as long. That's age 9 or 10. Once the child reaches age 11, some of the posts on the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, say that he should really be fasting the full day. Others disagree, and we definitely are mekel for a weak child who can't fast at age 11, but the Mishnah Berurah says we're mekel for all children, because all children are weak nowadays. This is a klal and chinuch in general. Children are weak. Children are very weak nowadays, especially. That's true about fasting. It's true about giving them musr. It's true about it being too hard on our kids. Kids are very weak. Adults are weak too, by the way. We're all a lot weaker in this generation. So we assume the Mishnah Berurah says that we can be more lenient for all children, because really they're all too weak, and they don't have to really start at age 11, maybe age 12, or the last fast before their bar mitzvah. At least at that point, to train them in a really good fast is helpful. If a child does eat on Yom Kippur, does he make kiddush? Do you remember anything about this? We told a story once about the Abnei Nezer, and his father told him to make kiddush. So we assume la'alacha, the Mishnah Berurah assumes la'alacha, I'll leave it at this. The Mishnah Berurah assumes la'alacha that if a child eats on Yom Kippur, or a chola eats on Yom Kippur, they should not make kiddush. They should not make kiddush. It's the Rebbe Kidiger has what to say about that, but that's what the Mishnah Berurah assumes. He should say yala v'yavo in benching, though. When he benches on the meal, he should say yala v'yavo yom ha-kippur mazeh, because it is a yontif, and now he's happens to be benching Yom Kippur. It's kind of weird, but he should recognize the day if he's doing so. Bathing kids, we don't bathe kids on Yom Kippur. We shouldn't even ask a guy to bathe kids on Yom Kippur. The only time you would ever bathe a kid on Yom Kippur is if he was extremely soiled, extremely dirty, to the point where you were worried that he'd be sick, or you were worried that he'd be so uncomfortable that he could get sick, because we assume every child is at risk of becoming sick in halacha. Oh, every child is deemed a chola she'ein bo sakana. Is someone who's not at risk of chas v'shalom death, but he's always possibly going to get sick, and we protect them from that. So in such a case, you may wash them just to get the dirt off, but the extensive washing and washing for any other reason would not be allowed. Also, a lot of people don't know this, but leather shoes, we really should not allow our kids to wear leather shoes on Yom Tov at any age. We shouldn't give them to them. That would be feeding them the Isur B'Yadayim actively. And even if your child is old enough and he's wearing the shoes himself, you should really remove them. You should take them off and tell them he can't do that, because they shouldn't be wearing leather shoes. We'll see the Gemara that talks about this soon on Yom Kippur. Okay, so that's like the basic rundown. But what comes out is basically these are the details of chinuch. These are the details of training. But what about feeding the child isurim? So I have a very basic assumption that we could draw over here, a conclusion we could draw. As we've discussed 1,000 times, even when chinuch doesn't apply, you can't actively, proactively feed the child isurim. You can't get him, you can't push him, you can't prod him to do the isur, to do the avera, correct? We've said that 1,000 times. Okay, so it's absolutely true. A child can't fast at age 5, and a child shouldn't fast at age 8. Fine, we get that. And even at age 9, it should only be for a couple hours here and there. I get all of that. But can I feed the child on Yom Kippur? Can I give him food into his mouth on Yom Kippur? So, again, without thinking too hard about it, the obvious answer should be no, we can't do that. Look in source number 2. The Minchas Chinuch says a fascinating, fascinating thing. V'nirali, af bekatan gamer, a tiny toddler. No, he says better. Taketh mamish b'shah shenolad, the day of his birth, the day that he's born. Oser la'achilo rakatzarchlo, avalo yoser. You know how much you're allowed to feed a kid who's 1 day old, who's a week old, who's a month old? You know how much you can give him? Exactly as much as he needs. He needs 1 ounce of milk to live. Don't give him 2 ounces. He needs 1 bowl of cereal at age 5. Don't give him a second bowl of cereal. The little bit more that you go above his tzarech, above his need, that is an iser of lo sa'achilim. Okay, ach bekatan kazeh, little 1 day old baby. You can't tell when the kid needs more. You have a 5-year-old. So you don't torture them. If the kid already ate today and doesn't need more food right now, it is usur, says the Minchas Chinuch, to feed him more because not necessary. It's not necessary. And the truth is, look in source number 3. The Mishnah Berurah here quotes from the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says basically the same thing. The Kasuf of Magen Avraham, the lispo slow ochel biadayim aser lechule alma af leachrini, even for a third party to feed him, kemo shar davar iser she aser laachilo lechule alma. It's no different than any other case. In every case, we assume if it's nevela, if it's trepa, if it's anything that's aser, you can't cause the child to do actively. So why would this be any different? It's Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. True, the child has to eat to stay alive. But beyond that, says the Minchas Chinuch, says the Magen Avraham, you can't give him any more food. That is a wild, wild thing, no? It's an amazing... So far, it's pretty logical. We haven't found the room to argue yet. But that is a wild thing the Minchas Chinuch is telling us. The reason why it's so wild is because has anyone ever seen anyone be careful about this and not feed their kids on Yom Kippur? I never saw that. So we have to see why we don't see that in our reality. But that's what the Magen Avraham and the Minchas Chinuch suggest.
So you're talking about generally, though, right?
I'm sorry?
Generally, you're not supposed to feed them more than they need to.
As opposed to what?
As opposed to just on Yom Kippur.
Just on Yom Kippur. Just on Yom Kippur.
So not generally?
Just on Yom Kippur. Yeah.
So generally, you can feed them more
than... Of course. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Himself.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Meaning, what if I put the food on the table and the kid picks up and says, let's get to that soon. Let's get to that soon. That's an excellent question. Meaning, what? How, we have to get to this. How do you define feeding? Does it mean I shove it down your throat? Right. What if I make the sandwich and I put it in front of him? What if I hold, do I have to hold the grapes on the vine as he eats them off like a king in the palace? Or does it just putting on the table is already feeding him? So let's get back to that. Right now, I would assume the simplest idea is that you give him food. But we'll get back to it. We nether. Yeah, the truth is that what we're saying right now from the Minchas Chinuch, that it makes sense, it may be Tali and a little bit of Lamdus, a little bit of a Chakira, a little bit of a, you have to put on your learning head for a second, the Sefer Mikroi Kodesh by Ratzvi Pesach Frank. Ratzvi Pesach Frank was a tremendous posek in Eretz Yisrael not so long ago. He wrote the Tshuvas Hartzvi. He also wrote a Sefer called Mikroi Kodesh, which is Sugyos and Halacha, related to the Yamim Tovim. Very fascinating Sefer, very helpful, useful Sefer in terms of learning, in terms of Halacha, and a very, very, very interesting and joyful Sefer. So he there quotes the Sefer Marcheshes. The Marcheshes presents a Chakira about exactly what we're talking about. Is the fact that Ein Ma'achil Nes HaKatan Yom Kippur, the fact that we cannot feed a Katan Yom Kippur, is that, or sorry, I should say it the other way. The fact that we are allowed to feed a child on Yom Kippur, the fact that we're allowed to give him food to eat, what's the reason we're allowed to do that? Is the reason because if we don't feed him, it's pikuach nefesh? Chas v'shalom, he'll get sick. Chas v'shalom, worse. Sakanas nefashos. So we have to feed him in order to sustain him, in order to keep him healthy, in order to keep him alive. Is that the reason it's permissible? Or is it because there's no iser to feed him whatsoever on Yom Kippur? There's just no iser. Why would it be iser? There's nothing to do with a katan. So if you assume the first way, that the allowance to feed a child in Yom Kippur is because even though technically speaking he shouldn't be eating, or I should say, we should not be feeding him on Yom Kippur, but since you have to keep him alive, you're allowed to feed him. If that's true, then what's the obvious conclusion of the halacha? You can only feed him as much as you need to keep him alive, like the Minchas Chinuch said, because the whole license to feed him in the first place is only for his health, is only to keep him alive, to sustain him. The second you're going above and beyond that, the second you're feeding him to make him enjoy it more, to have a little bit more than was necessary, cut him off right there, because that's all he was allowed to do, was to keep him alive. However, if we assume, no, it's not that it's really usher to feed him, but since you have to keep him alive, we'll give you license, we'll give you a kula, we'll give you a leniency, a heter to do so. No, there is no prohibition, there is no isser to feed him whatsoever on Yom Kippur. It's not an issue, it's not an isser at all, and therefore you're allowed to feed him. If that's the case, then maybe there should be no distinction between how much you're feeding him and how much you're not feeding him, no? If the case is that it's totally permissible to feed him, then whatever you want to feed him, however much you want to feed him, Yom Kippur is totally permissible. That's the two sides that we're grappling with over here.
How would you understand the Minchas?
Right, so the Minchas Chinuch is clearly assuming the first side. There's no other way to decide it. Yeah, he's clearly assuming the first way, that it's a question of Pikuach Nevesh, and unless you're doing it to help him, cut him off. There's no more feeding him. But we're suggesting that maybe the truth is that there's no Isser at all to feed him Yom Kippur. If that's true, then there shouldn't be this Chumrah of the Minchas Chinuch that none of us ever heard of until today. Now, in order to go further on this, why you have a quizzical face on, well, we could say all we want, we can make up svaras all we want, make up logic all we want, but why wouldn't the Minchas Chinuch be right? Why would it be true that there's no Isser to feed him on Yom Kippur? There is an Isser of Safinon. There is an Isser of Losa Achilim, of not being allowed to feed children, Isurim. It's Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to eat, so therefore we should not be allowed to feed him actively the food. So why would it be different in our case? So before we get to the logic, before we get to the svara, let's see two gemaras which seem to imply that the Minchas Chinuch and the Magen Avraham are just dead wrong. It might be that they're just dead wrong. The Machz Eliyahu, written by Rav Dayan Pesach Eliyahu Falk from Gateshead. He passed away 3 years ago or so. He passed away right when COVID was beginning. I don't think he died from COVID. It was like right before. It was in January of that year or something. He's a tremendous posek, a tremendous teacher in Gateshead. He taught men and women separately. He taught men and women Hilchos Shabbos. He wrote beautiful Sifrei Halacha, Machzeh Eliyahu, that's the Sefer. 3 volumes, 2 of them were published in his lifetime, the 3rd was posthumous after he passed away, and other Svarim as well, tremendous Talmud Chacham. So he quotes these two Gemaras and lines them up very beautifully. If you look in source number 4, you have the Gemara in Erevin on Memon Beis. The Gemara there is wondering if and how we should make Shehechayanu on Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur night. Usually by a Yom Tif, we say Shehechayanu when the Yom Tif begins. So should we do that for Yom Kippur? And if so, how should we do so? What's the problem with how? The problem with how is that we usually do it over a kos, over a cup of wine. On Yom Kippur, hopefully, you're not having a cup of wine, correct? So how are you going to make Shehechayanu? Should it be over a cup of wine? So the Gemara says like this, Yom Kippurim Hechi Avid, how should you do it on Yom Kippur? Im Avarecha Lei V'Shasilei. If you're going to make a bracha and you're going to drink it, came with the Amr's man, Kibble Alei. Once you said Shechianu, you're accepting Yom Kippur, Vasilei, and therefore you can't drink the wine. The ha Amr Le Rav Yirmiyah bar Avil Rav, mi bedalt, v'amr Le in, bedilna fine. Livruch Alei v'linche, maybe you should make the bracha and just leave the wine right there. No, but the halach is, ha-mevarech tzarech sheyitom. If you make the bracha, you have to taste the wine. So we're stuck. It's a catch-22. We're in a place where no man's land. We can't get out of this conundrum. So he says like this, Leisvei Leinuka, what does that mean? Make Shechianu over a cup of wine and then hand the cup of wine to a child. Yeah, to a baby, to a child. That's a good advice, says the Gemara, no? So the Gemara says, nah, Leisvei Leinuka, it's not a good idea. Why not? Dilma Asi Lemisrach, what does that mean? This child, I don't know, whatever, let's say he's 4 years old, he's 5 years old. He knows it's Yom Kippur, and he knows on Yom Kippur what happens on Yom Kippur night. He always gets a geschmack, a little buzz from the wine in shul. So what's going to happen? This kid's going to be 5, he's going to be 6, he's going to be 7. By the time he turns 13, he's going to think that, well, how do we start Yom Kippur every year? A little bit of wine. We have a little l'chaim as Yom Kippur starts. Asi l'misrach, he's not going to understand and appreciate the fast of Yom Kippur because we're going to train him in the opposite. We're going to train him of drinking wine on Yom Kippur. Because of that, you can't give a cup of wine to a child on Yom Kippur in order to help you make the bracha of Shehechayanu. What do you see from this Gemara? You tell me. It's usher to give the child wine. Yes, we see that. Because of what we said before? Because of Losa Achilim?
No.
Ah. So this is a huge distinction, right? If it were me and you writing this Gemara, right? Which I don't want to say which ones, but some of the Gemaras I actually did write. They asked me to write it a long time ago. I wrote some of the Gemaras. Not this one, though. But if you and I were writing the Gemara, what would we write? You can't give it to a katan. You can't give it to a child. Why? Because you can't feed him Isurim on Yom Kippur. But the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says, maybe it would have been okay to feed him Isurim Yom Kippur. Maybe that wouldn't have been so bad. Maybe it wouldn't be Los Achilim. But Asil Misrach, Achinach Ishu, you're going to train him in eating on Yom Kippur. That's a terrible thing. But the Gemara seems to be broadcasting very clearly that the only issue is Asi L'Misrach and not an issue of Lo Sa'achilum, not an issue of feeding a child, Isurim. Why? We don't know why yet, but that's what the Gemara seems to apply. Look at source number 5, the Gemara in Yuma, Ayin Ches Mabez. We referenced it, if you want a sheet, it's over there. We referenced it earlier in the night, the Gemara in Yuma, Ayin Ches from the Shulchan Aruch, but we didn't go in depth yet. In source number 5, Tan Rabbanan, Tinokos Mutarin Bekulam, Chutz Min Ilas Sandal. So the Gemara assumes here, it's a brisa, that children are allowed to partake of any of the things that are usually forbidden for adults on Yom Kippur, the 5 things we mentioned before. However, ne'ilas sandal is an exception. Ne'ilas sandal, wearing leather shoes, that's prohibited even for a child on Yom Kippur. And the Gemara here has a back and forth a little bit about why that's so. Then the Gemara at the end, in the bold here, elahanach de'lavri b'sayu. If it's a case of any of the things that are forbidden on Yom Kippur that aren't necessary for the health, for the sustenance of the child, gazuhu rabbanan, so the rabbanan said not to do it. Hanach the rabbisayuhu, but if it's something which is necessary for the child, lo gazuhu rabbanan, to amar abaye, amar li aim, because Abaye said, my nurse told me, rabbise dianuka, the way a child lives, what sustains a child, maya, what's maya? Water. Chamime, rinsing, right? Like a bathing. And mishcha, oil, ointment, right? Smearing, smoothing themselves with the ointment. Those are the ways that a child stays healthy, stays okay. Hainu Rabbi Sayu. So it's clear if you look at the Rashi here in source number 5 in the indented part, Rashi clearly says what we're talking about here, what the Gemara is going back and forth about, is whether you are allowed to give these Yisurim to the child. Put the sandals on, wash him, feed him, all of those things. And here, it's clear from the Gemara that at least the ones we're talking about is eating and drinking is permissible for a child. The only thing that's inappropriate is wearing the sandals. And as such, at this stage in the Gemara, it's clear that the Gemara is assuming that's, it's almost giving us a reason at this point, but that since it's its sustenance, the child is allowed to be fed on Yom Kippur. Not only the child can eat, but you can feed the child, and it's not an issue of lo sa'achilum, not an issue of feeding actively that we've said until now is a problem on a d'oraisa level in so many other cases. Okay, there are other proofs as well. There are other rayos from Gemara, from Rishonim, the Machz Eliyahu. I said before, he has 3 simanim about this topic in a row, and literally 20 pages just on and on about this Minchas Chinuch and why it's wrong. I just picked out for you two of the proofs, but there's many, many more if you look there. I think he has 3 Gemaras, 3 Rishonim, and then a whole bunch of other sources. But we have this chiluk, we have this distinction that maybe it's not like the Minchas Chinuch thinks, that there's a sakanas nefashos that allows you to feed the child as much as he needs in order to stay alive, but rather there is no isser at all of feeding a child in Yom Kippur. We have the what, but we don't yet have the why. We don't yet have the reason for that. We don't have a svara, a logic, to logically distinguish, to show why there's a chiluk, there's a distinction between those two categories. All of Torah, where you can't give the child Yisurim, and Yom Kippur, where you're all of a sudden allowed to feed him on Yom Kippur. So what is the distinction? What's the difference? So if you look here in source number 6, starting on page 6, starting page 1 and going over to page 2, this is from the Sefer HaYashar of Rabbeinu Tam. The Sefer HaYashar of Rabbeinu Tam is Rabbeinu Tam is one of the Balei Tosos. He's quoted in Tosos all the time on the side of the page. And these are like Shilos Tshuvos, responsa back and forth, questions he was asked, answers he gave. So on page 1, you have the beginning of the question. On page 2, you have the beginning of the answer. He was basically asked this question, why is it that we see that so many people feed their children Yom Kippur? Isn't that a problem of Safinan? Isn't that a problem of feeding kids Isurim, which you're not allowed to do, but they're doing it on Yom Kippur? How is that permissible? So Rabbeinu Tam gives an answer. It's a little bit cryptic, but if we read it together, maybe we'll understand a little bit. Look in the bold, before number 7. Aval achila ushasiya e efsher. De afal gab de lo sakanihi chayshinan ve lo gazer ve lo dami lishratzim. Says Rabbeinu Tam like this. On the whole, on a macro level, it is dangerous for a child not to eat, correct? Okay. It may be that this pretzel you're giving him right now is not the difference between life and death. It may not even be the difference between being sick and being healthy. But there are situations in which a child will need to eat because of sakanas nefashos. On Yom Kippur, hayin ribisayu, food is what keeps him alive. Correct? Good. Now, it's true. You could have said, so now look and pick and choose, like the Minchas Chinuch told us. When it's sakanas nefashos to keep him alive, you feed him. When it's a little above and beyond, don't feed him anymore. That's possible. You could have thought that's true. But says Rabbeinu Tam, no. Since there are cases in which it's sakanas nefashos, across the board, we have a heter, a kula, that you're allowed to feed them, a Yom Kippur. And he says, lo nitna Torah, the Torah doesn't want to give, lo nitna debarach l'shirurim, it doesn't want to give shiurim, give distinctions and differences in measurements of how you're allowed to do something. If it's mutter to feed a child in Yom Kippur, it's mutter to feed a child in Yom Kippur. The Torah didn't want to distinguish between cases in which it's mutter and cases where it's not mutter. No, nasata debarach l'shirurim, no. Keep it even, keep it straight. Lo plug on a daraisa level, that you're allowed to feed completely a child whenever you so please on Yom Kippur. I'm not saying you should feed him desserts and all of that, but the Rabbeinu Tam is saying that since there are nuanced cases, we're not going to start cutting and splicing and making differences between the different cases, but rather we'll say across the board you're allowed to feed the child on Yom Kippur. That's the suggestion of Rabbeinu Tam. Now, the most meaningful suggestion to us, especially given last week, which I know some of you were already jumping to say a few minutes ago, is source number 7. I'm quoting it for you from the Alke Yosef. It's really from Rav Avadya Yosef. I put it here because you'll see it's a very interesting source that he quotes. But Rav Avadya writes this in the Tshuva Yabia Omer that we quoted last week. Other Achronim say this as well. Look inside those to see a fascinating source he quotes. So he quotes the Minchas Chinuch, and he says, well, we don't hold like the Minchas Chinuch. We don't assume that you have to hold back on feeding your kids. You can feed your kids as much as you want, Yom Kippur. It's no problem whatsoever. Where do I see that? Look in the bold. The Kasav Alzen Maran, Maran, my father, Shlita, meaning Rav Avadya Yosef, right? What did Rav Avadya Yosef write? Where? Big Gilion HaSefer, Vizalashono, meaning they had Rav Avadya Yosef's copy, his edition of Minchas Chinuch, and they found, scribbled on the side of the page, the following notes, and they typed it up for you. These are the words that Rav Avadya Yosef wrote on the side of his Minchas Chinuch. Don't look inside my Minchas Chinuch. You're going to find a bunch of doodles. But if you look inside of Rav Avadya's Minchas Chinuch, you'll find this comment on this piece. Nearly, she'ein devarei Minchas Chinuch nechonim bezel halacha. The Minchas Chinuch is wrong. Ki hu mashve din zeh l'may dekaim lon ba'alma de'aser l'misvi yadayim l'katan devar iser. Because the Minchas Chinuch assumes that the same way that you can't give a child McDonald's, you also can't give a child food on Yom Kippur. They're the same type of thing. They're exactly the same iser. That's what the Minchas Chinuch assumes. Says Rav Avadya, "Ube'emes yesh lechalik chilek gadol b'zeh." There is a huge distinction, and this is what you wanted to say 10 minutes ago. Correct? This shiny hachasha Michael mutter va'yom gorim lo ha'iser. Explain it.
Food itself is not an iser. It just happens to be something you shouldn't have.
Excellent. There are two types of isurim, two types of sins that exist. Some averos are a cheftza shel avera. The object is objectively, inherently usser in its nature. A piece of pig is an isser. It's a piece of isser. It's a chaticha shel isura. It's a cheftza shel isser. Yom Kippur, it's the same kosher chicken soup. It's the same soda. It's the same pretzel rods. But it happens to be Yom Kippur right now. It's not that the cheftza, the item, is usser. It's that the person is not allowed to partake of that food at this given time, at this juncture, in the time of the week, in the time of the year. So, says Rav Avadya, that's a major difference. And he quotes that the Pri Chadash made this famous. The Pri Chadash said this before him. This is a major distinction. The Minchas Chinuch's idea only exists that you can't feed a child more than is necessary, unless it's Sekanas Nefashos. That exists when you're talking about an Isser. Eating a Yom Kippur is not an Isser. It's food that's mutter at an usser time. So the child doesn't have Isure Gavra. The child as a person doesn't have Isurim. So if the food is not inherently usser, then you can't say it's usser for the child to partake of it. And therefore, the issue of Losa Achilim, of feeding, doesn't apply on Yom Kippur at all. It's just not shayich. It's not relevant to our discussion because it's a totally different ballpark. We're not talking about Isurim in objective terms, but rather a timeline Isser. Yeah.
Said earlier that Rav Avadya said we don't hold like
Is
that generally or just in this situation?
In this situation, yeah.
Are there other situations where...
I don't know. Interesting question. You have to see how many comments he has. I don't know. So another interesting...
Not coming would be if you had non-kosher food and it was the only thing you could feed your
child. Right. Well, meaning it would just be a regular case of non-kosher food at that point, right?
Right, but you would have to.
Yeah,
it sounds like
you'd want to reserve. Right. Yeah, the last thing, the Machzor Eliyahu quotes an interesting source from the Divrei Yecheskel. The Divrei Yecheskel says that, and we won't get too far into this, but he says that the issue of fasting Yom Kippur is a very interesting one. It's not really an inherent separate Isser. It's actually tied to the mitzvah's essay, the positive commandment of V'nei Yisem es Nafsho Seichem. There's a mitzvah to afflict yourself on Yom Kippur, to torture yourself on Yom Kippur. So the Isser not to eat, it's not a lav, it's not a los essay, it's not a negative commandment. It's sort of just the way that we are keeping the positive commandment of torturing yourself is through abstaining from eating. But it's not really an Isser in and of itself. So maybe, according to that, there is no issue of feeding the child food on Yom Kippur, because there is no Isser of eating Yom Kippur. There's a positive commandment to torture yourself, but you're not feeding him a positive commandment. It doesn't make any sense, right? You're not feeding him anything. The Isser is just to not torture yourself. You're feeding him. You're not doing an Isser biadayim. You're just giving him the food. So maybe that's another way to get around the issue. Three approaches. Rabbeinu Tam, the Rabbi Omer, which we quoted until now in his notes on the side of the Michel Chinuch, or Rabbi Yosef, and also this Divrei Yecheskel, that's very fascinating. When it comes down to it, there's another point which Steve brought up, which we have to come back to now, which is maybe there's a whole other way out of this. What does it mean to feed a child Yisurim? So if you look in Shas, the word Safi or Safinan often literally means putting into a person's mouth. You put something into a person's mouth. You put the truma, in some cases, into a person's mouth. So maybe feeding means you put the shratzim, you put the nevela, you put the trefa into the person's mouth. But anything short of that isn't considered feeding. I put the food on the table, and the child decides to eat it or not eat it on his own accord, of his own volition. That's his choice. So maybe if you prepare a sandwich or put the pretzels out or open the bag for him, that's not considered feeding. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who we quoted before in the Sefer Mikrai Kodesh, he entertains that possibility. He leans towards being lenient on being makel on this and assumes it's possible that that's not considered feeding. That's not considered ha'achala of safinan bi'adayim. However, the Machzor Eliyahu, and also if you look at source number 8, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, written by the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, they lean towards being machmir about this, that even just making the food available, preparing the food, giving it to the child in such a way that it's available for him, that's already considered a ma'achilim bi'adayim. That's already considered actively, proactively feeding the child, and that would be the iser of safinan. The Mishnah Berurah talks about this a little bit in Siman Tav Reish Mem, because the Mishnah Berurah talks about whether it's aser to give a child food outside of a sukkah, on sukkahs. And the Mishnah Berurah distinguishes between a case where you actually put the food in the child's mouth outside of the sukkah, and when you just make it available to them to eat outside of the sukkah. You really can make a different distinction. Is there an iser to eat out of the sukkah on sukkahs, or is there a mitzvah to eat inside the sukkah? That's a big discussion. The Minchas Chinuch talks about this elsewhere. That's a big discussion, but the Mishnah Berurah certainly raises our issue. So Steve, your idea might be true, according to some. It might be true that that feeding only includes shoving in the mouth, but making it available isn't quite feeding, and so that would help us with a lot of cases that come up in Yom Kippur, even if you thought to be machmir about it, which we're not being machmir based on the three approaches that we had until now. What's interesting, if you look in source number 9, we'll end with this in terms of the halacha part of the shir, what's interesting is that the ideas that we developed in terms of the difference between an isser and a time isser is also applicable in at least two other areas, many more also, but two other areas that are prevalent. First of all, we are not allowed to eat before Kiddush. We're aware of that. When you start davening in the morning, on Shabbos morning, you can't eat now until you've heard Kiddush. Kiddush allows you to eat. Before that, you can't eat. But children eat all the time. The candy man gives them candy. Does KBT have a candy man? Or what do you guys do, like macadamia nuts or something? Spices? Zatar? You got Zatar? So, I went to a school with a lot of, we have Persians. Yeah, great neck, yeah. Okay, but I'm saying, but tadi, they had tadi. So, that's the crispy rice, right? Fine. So I've had it a few times. So the candy man in shul is giving out candy left and right to the young kids before Kiddush. Is that okay? You're feeding them Yisurim B'Yadayim. Okay, so maybe he's not shoving them. It's if the candy man shoves the candy in the kids' mouths, get a new candy man. That's weird. I assume he's just giving it to them. They're opening and they're eating it themselves, correct? Okay, fine. So is that an issue? So the post can point out, the Beis Yosef already quotes this, but the Rav Avad Yosef makes it clear, you have in source number 9, that no, what's the Isser of eating before Kiddush? First of all, it's probably a positive commandment. Make Kiddush, and you can't eat beforehand. It's not an Isser of eating food. It's make Kiddush. But either way, it's a time-bound Isser, correct? You just can't eat until after Kiddush. The food isn't treif. The candy man's not giving out little bacon bits. He's giving out candy. That's kosher. LMI, right now it's not time to eat it. Right, exactly. And that's similar to our case of Yom Kippur. Similarly, you're not allowed to eat before Shacharis. The Gemara in Brachos has drushas for this, that you're not allowed to eat before Shacharis. There's two different drushas, and they might have nafkaminas, but you're not allowed to eat before Shacharis. The Shulchan Aruch assumes you can't even drink water before Shacharis. Most people don't assume that way. That's that may be true according to the Rambam, but I'm sorry? We're very weak. That's not even a joke. I mean, that's part of why the Mishnah Berurah has this whole long discussion about why you're allowed to drink coffee before davening. You know, whether you could put milk in and sugar in and each of those things, fine. You know, at this point, the postkim have gotten to the point where they're making like frappuccinos before Shacharis. But I drink coffee black. I drink good, fresh roasted coffee, different coffee every month. Black, nothing in it. I don't touch anything. Make it in a Chemex at home. I always have coffee, at least one or two cups before davening. I always drink before davening. We need it. We need the strength to be able to daven. It's not the shayach otherwise. Water, for sure, people are usually leaning down for sure. But eating is not allowed before davening. No, I always only have black coffee. Yeah, yeah. It happens to be true that I always only have black coffee. So, if you want to talk about it, like the tasting notes and everything, I'm into the whole thing. So the question is, can you give a child food before Shacharis? So the Rav Adya says the same thing is true here. Yeah, it's true that you're giving him food at a time when you're not supposed to eat food before Shacharis, but you're not giving him treif. You're not giving him a chefta shel is. You're not giving him objective, problematic food. You're giving him kosher food, good food, fine food, at a time where you're not supposed to eat it. The iser of safina, the iser of feeding a child, doesn't apply at that point, the same way that it doesn't necessarily apply in Yom Kippur against the Minchas Chinuch, against the Magen Avraham that we quoted earlier.